What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, the first Meet Me at Mutual of 2018 with players on the field. I'm Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat. With me as always, at C70 on Twitter, because if you don't know that about now, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, it's only like 60-something shows, and maybe you're picking this up for the heck of it. Maybe you're just finding this. But anyway, C70. Also, Alan Medlock, the Redbird Daily, AMedlock1 on Twitter. Alan, like I said, it was a good week. You got to see the guys, pitchers and catchers are back and actually doing stuff. Most of the, position players have already reported, even though I don't know if that's official reporting for them is come yet. We're seeing video, we're seeing pictures, we're seeing interviews. It's not anything that matters, but it's nice to see.
Oh, absolutely. The official report date is Monday, but most of the players in camp, I haven't seen Ozuna yet, but I've seen most everybody else. It's nice to see green grass in the pictures and to see the videos. So yeah, we're there. Think about how long the winter was and how stressful, November and December were looking for deals, and it's finally here, and now we get to see the product on the field.
Yeah, I mean, a week from today, we're recording this Friday night, a week from today, we'll have had our first game, the first game against the Marlins. I assume it's always against the Marlins. Look at my schedule. Yeah, Marlins on the 23rd. So we'll have an actual game under our belts by the time we record next. So it is getting there. It is getting closer, and it's good to see. We get a lot of with the slow schedules, and there's a lot more time for writers to interview players and start writing reports. It seems like every player will get some sort of article between now and in the really beginning of things. The first, I guess, the biggest, I don't want to say it's news, but Adam Wainwright comes out and talks to the media and says, look, I'm just thinking about today. I'm just going to think about today every day. I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to talk about retirement. I'm not going to talk about what could happen. I'm just going out to be the best Cardinal I can be. I don't know that there's anything else he could say. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to say, yeah, I'm going to retire at the end of the year, because if he has a good year, he's going to want to keep playing. Did that really mean anything, or do you think it'll even stop the questions from coming?
No, I don't think it'll stop him at all. I know you walked, the player in that situation walked such a thin line, because you know that he means that well, because he's a good guy. But to me, it doesn't come off very well. It kind of comes off like, don't waste my time with this kind of stuff. And I know you're trying to cut it off before it begins. That's very unrealistic. And you almost come off really pretentious in that situation. But what else was he supposed to say? You're completely right. So whenever I saw I read it, and I kind of waited to see it. And then today, or earlier this afternoon, I was like, I'm going to catch up on everything before I leave. And then, so we'll kind of be ready for tonight. And I watched the deal, and I was like, he kind of comes off looking jerkish, the way that he approached it, but it may have just been me, but I completely understand where he's coming from. And he's trying to be the good guy that he is. The overly optimistic, and you know the route that I'm going with this. I think anybody that listens to some of the regular knows that. But I did think, I was like, that it's kind of insulting the intelligence of these guys a little bit. They've got a job to do, and I mean, I'm kind of riding the fence like I do in a lot of topics, it seems like, but I don't know. When I watched the video, I was like, I saw Stan McNeil and those guys kind of laughing and looking at each other afterwards, and what can you really say?
Yeah, but and I get that, but I also get, you know, again, it's spring training. He's going to talk to Derek Gould. He's going to talk to Bernie. He's going to talk to, is it Joe Trezza or whoever's taking Jennifer Langosh's place?
Yeah.
He's going to talk to, you know, Brian Stull. I mean, he's going to talk to all these guys. And I know he would get frustrated with that, especially when you're a competitor like he is. And he always has got that positive attitude, and he's always thinking that he's, you know, right there, right around the corner. And so I get why he's trying to do that. And yeah, maybe it didn't come off quite the best, but I think most people got the idea. And again, it's easy enough to him to say now, you know, I've already talked about that, you know, let's, you know, we'll talk about how my bullpen was or how things were. Now, again, what I want to see out of Wainwright, I want to see if he's, you know, throwing it at a reasonable velocity. We'll see about the rest. I mean, he's going to have bad days. He's going to have good days if he's approximately what he was. I mean, he had some good stretches last year. And then, you know, when his elbow started to give out on him, it wasn't really pretty at the end. Of course, it wasn't really pretty at the beginning either. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. But I still think Wainwright can be serviceable. We kind of talked about this last week. If he's healthy, and I think that's the first thing that we need to see. And I don't know that we've gotten any, of course it's, you know, they're not throwing full strength. They're just kind of, you know, just getting the movements in, getting back to throwing. So he's not exactly airing it out yet. So it's hard to know. But you know, I guess that, you know, that kind of opens the question. I think some people have already talked about, what does happen if Adam Wainwright comes out after the end of May and has an ERA of 6? I know that Mike Matheny, you know, says to expect greatness or whatever. I don't know exactly what he was getting at there. I mean, we can, you know, hope for it. I don't think expecting greatness is a really good idea with the way that Wainwright's pitched the last couple of years. But, I mean, who makes the call and what is the call on a guy that's in the last year of his career, of his contract, and, you know, if he's struggling, how much rope does he get?
It seems like they're setting up themselves to have 6 to 7 to 8 guys that could take a start in a moment's notice. I know that's easy to say now because we can't bank on injury throughout to where they're going to have to count him. I know that's not simply answering the question, but I don't know. I wondered about that because it kind of seems like everybody's on the same page, but in the competitor in him, it's going to be tough to get him off the mound. And, you know, it's easier said than done when you say, well, if I'm not performing how I know that I can, or if I can't pitch to that level that I'm accustomed to, then I'm going to walk away. You know, you hear that guy say that a lot and it doesn't happen. So I don't know. I mean, that is probably the biggest question mark with the team this year, I would think, is how long that would go if he doesn't throw a quality start up every 3 or 4 starts and really struggles giving up runs at the rate that he kind of did at times last year, how quick they are to make a change and what direction they go.
Yeah, and we'll say at the beginning of Joe Trezza's article here on MLB.com, he does point out, apparently Wainwright did actually start thinking about retirement, you know, at the end of April last year when he had that 6 ERA. So it's possible that he's going in, I mean, again, not saying it out loud, but he may be going in and saying, look, I'm giving this one more shot, and if it doesn't pan out, you know, and it doesn't, I don't know that he's going to make it last the whole year. You know, if he's obviously not working, I kind of feel like he may actually say, okay, that's it, I'm done. We're trying to figure out some other way to use him, but it feels like it may be. We'll have to see how he goes. You know, maybe he could be used as a reliever, but, you know, one, Cardinals have a lot of relievers, and two, if he's struggling that much as a starter, unless he is, it's the fact that he can't get through the fourth or the fifth, but his first couple innings are good, you know, how can you use him as a reliever? I don't know. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a delicate situation, and it's not necessarily one that Matheny has been great at in the past. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's that's kind of the gray cloud over everything, right? You know, right now. So it'll be very interesting to see what direction they go and who pulls the trigger on it. And, you know, what gets reported when the decision's made may not be what actually happens either.
And that's very true. I mean, that's, and that's one of those things where he might retire, but because he's kind of been bumped a little bit by the front office or by Matheny or whatever. And, we will see. I don't know. We will, again, that's one of those things that we're going to be watching when those games, you know, and I think the Cardinals have about 20 games this spring that are televised. So we'll be able to see a couple of Wainwright starts, and, you know, the first few may not tell us much, but, you know, then they well may, if he's only throwing 72 or something like that, then they may give us a pretty good idea real quick of what this is going to look like.
I'm optimistic that he has a pretty good, a decent spring and a decent season overall.
I think so. I mean, we'll see, but you're right. I'm kind of still hoping and feeling like there's some good stuff there. But we will.
Oh, I think going
we will say
sure.
Wait and see. All right. Well, John Mozeliak is down there and talking to the press, of course, because they're going to. And one of the things that he said that he feels like the off season was active. He says he thinks he likes the team, all this kind of stuff. He thinks that they've done enough to be contenders, and he's not ruling out that things would change though between now and opening day. Let's get to the beginning part. Was this an active enough offseason? Well, did this count as an active offseason, I guess?
Well, you kind of know my feeling on that. They checked the boxes. There are reports that said one says experience closer than someone with closing experience. I heard someone with closing experience. I know other people right at the beginning of the season press conference heard one other thing. Everything they said they were going to do, they did. They did what they said they were going to do. The names weren't the ones that made people happy. But I agree. I think it was successful. I think they did improve. I think they felt like they only needed incremental improvement. And, maybe a few shifts in, I think there was a clubhouse clean out a little bit, and I don't know what direction that necessarily went or who it was, but, I think that they kind of, some new faces and some new voices were needed. But to answer your question, I do think they were very active, and I think they had a successful offseason doing what they said they were going to do.
Yeah, I mean, they made, four trades, signed three free agents. It's not counting minor league deals or anything like that. And that's a pretty decent, I mean, that's, you know, pretty decent amount right there. Trezza again, pointing out in a different article that, if you include the entire 40-man roster, it's 25% different than it was last year, which, you know, granted, when some, I think, Gersh or somebody pointed out that it could have been like 60 or something percent at the beginning of the year, you know, turning it over 25% didn't feel that much. And I think a lot of us, I mean, you look at the starting lineup and it's going to be very, very similar to what it was last year. You know, you can turn over the edges of the roster and get some churn, and that's not a bad thing. But it's not necessarily what we expected going into the season or going into the winter. And, you know, whether that's good or bad, I don't know. I mean, obviously Ozuna was a big one. But I think we expected, you know, a little bit more activity, and it didn't happen. But like you said, they didn't see this team as that far off. We'll see how accurate they are. Because as much as it struggled last year, it felt like it was way off. So we'll see. They're talking about the closers, and, you know, they'll try to figure that out, but they don't seem to be too, I mean, Mo does point out that you have to have that guy to finish games, but it doesn't sound like they're too concerned about this. I think it's like they feel from the arms they have or the arms that they might be able to use, either starters or relievers from the minors, that they're going to be able to find somebody to close ball games. And I don't know, is that the right way to go about this? I mean, we've talked in the past about how you don't want to overvalue a closer, but then again, it's kind of nice to have that one guy you're fairly confident about in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I think that there was two paths they could have taken. It was one, to go get somebody established, or two, throw arms at the problem. And I kind of like to throw arms at the problem the way that they've done it. And even bringing in Mott today and Mujica last month. I mean, I'm not saying those, that may never pan out. I'm not saying those are the answers at all, but they're stockpiling relievers right now to get guys out. And I'm a big fan of veteran relievers. So yeah, there may not be the lockdown guy per se that we know, but I can't remember a stat that I read, it's within the past week of 65% of teams in the league last year finished the season with a different closer than what they began the season with. You know, and that's it. It kind of goes into that. The bullpen is just fickle. I mean, that's just how it works. Year to year, it's different for almost every team, even the elite teams. So I don't know. I kind of like the approach that they're taking. I really like the Cardinals' approach to the offseason. So I would love to see Tuivalu take it over and really take that next step. I'm not sure. I'm not positive that Norris may not be the answer. You know, I was kind of glad to see that signing. I know that you and I talked about, well, if it's to be a bullpen piece and to get guys out, that's one thing, but to be rotation, you know, I'm not so sure that's just not lip service at this point, because it seemed like they don't really have that many holes in the rotation of names they could fill. They could probably go nine deep right now and be pretty safe with it. So I don't know, but, I kind of like the way that they're doing this, and, they've got some established guys in the pen, not the big name stopper that I think people wanted to hear.
Yeah, I think that's true. And like you said, it's a difficult thing, because if you go out and spend a whole lot of money on a Greg Holland and he doesn't work, then that's even more frustrating than blowing money on somebody else, because those are games that are directly lost by that pitcher. You know, I mean, there's really not another chance to come back and fix it if your closer starts giving up a lot of runs, and we've seen that numerous times. So I don't think I can argue with what they've done, but I can understand why it's a bit of a frustration.
Sure.
Mozeliak had some comments about Mike Matheny, and these are coming from Tim McKernan's interview with him. We try to make sure he has the best possible tools and makes the best possible decisions. Have we done that perfectly? Of course not. Are we learning and are we trying? I hope so. I do think critics gravitate toward his faults more than they gravitate toward what we see as his strengths. I guess, one, that last sentence makes you wonder what they see as his strengths are. You were talking to me even before we started that Matheny kind of has that target, and there is a pretty strong contingent that there is nothing that Matheny can do that's going to be right. But he's brought a lot of that on himself, too.
Sure. I mean, I heard the McKernan interview with Matheny, you know, within the past 2 to 3 weeks, and it was really good, but he never lets the guard down completely. You know, it comes off as standoffish and maybe a little bullheaded. And basically it doesn't help his cause. I think he even tried to do that to come off as a better person, but I just don't think it did. I don't think he's as bad as the majority thinks right now, but there's definitely some foot and mouth going on right now that I wish he hadn't said, you know, about Martinez. I know we were going to get into that next, but yeah, it just seems like anything he does is, draws a lot of fire from the fan base.
Yeah. It just, you know, again, it doesn't feel at times when we watch this that Matheny has learned a lot in 6 years. And I think that's the most frustrating thing. Because if Matheny had, and I do think he has improved in places. We've talked about this. He doesn't bunt quite as much. We saw him a little bit more flexible with his bullpen at times. But, you know, there's still a lot of errors. I mean, Matt Bowen will tell you how much, you know, how much over-reliance he can place on people. you know, I just, it does feel at times that the Cardinals have done everything, they can to make him succeed. And it, you know, and I know we've talked about this before too, but it just at some point, where does it come down to, this is more trouble than it's worth. You know, they've shifted the roster one way and another. They've done so much. And now I really kind of feel like this is it. This is their last straw of surrounding him with, you know, Kendo and Shields and Maddox and, you know, having Will McGee there. I mean, lots of the coaching staff's just outstanding is what it, you know, appears to be. And if for some reason that's still not working, then I don't know what they're, I don't know what they do then. Well, I mean, cause I know what they probably should do then.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they will do then. And that's interesting. Now, hopefully the Cardinals come out and win 90 something games or at least, maybe win more than people expect. And we don't have to worry about this discussion, but it's, I don't know. It just still continues to feel like they're doing everything they can to, you know, help him along, which is great. I mean, obviously no experience beforehand, blah, blah, blah. But at some point in time, you'd like to see that, the reason for that. You know, if he was a prodigy, if he was making some insightful moves and then, you know, making some boneheaded moves and you could see them, you know, working with him because they understood that this guy is going to get it one of these days. But I don't think we have seen that. Maybe the front office is seeing something different, but I don't think we've seen that, spark or that, you know, innate knowledge or whatever that warrants as much work as they've done. Now, again, they seem to like him as a leader, and we can get into that maybe here in a minute. Other than that, I don't know. And it comes to a point of time. Is that enough?
Yeah, more trouble than it's worth. Well, I mean, that's, you know, about as basic as we can put it, but it makes a lot of sense because they have had to make some pretty wholesale changes. I mean, the coaching changes mid-season last year is things that really don't happen very often, especially in Cardinals history to do that. And then to do the overhaul and make it looks ominous to a manager to bring in at least two guys with that could probably step in and do the job right away. So I don't know. They obviously have a formula to how they do things and they don't veer off from it very much. And I think that Matheny gets lucky in that situation, or you got to admire the belief they have in him. So you're right. I would love to see him, you know, win, you know, 15 to the first 20 and really, yeah, really get things going and see how people react at that point. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's some adjustments that have been made, but they seem minimal to the problems that still exist, i.e. the base running and things like that. So, I don't know. That's another good question. I mean, that's what worries me a little bit about the season is the two subjects we've had in the first 20 minutes are both just huge question marks. A, Matheny, and B, Wainwright. And that's just, yeah, like Gould said, this team has a really high ceiling, but a really low floor. You know, it could go either way really quick. So, or I may have said that backwards, but,
No, you got it right. And that's true. I mean, it could, I have problems believing, I don't know. I mean, I have problems believing that they're, I mean, I can see why people would say that, but I have problems believing that they're going to be a 75 win team or anything like
that.
Oh
yeah, I agree.
I mean,
I think
this is a team that's at least as good as last year, but you're right. I mean, if Wainwright is not good and they don't do anything about it, if the bullpen guys don't come through, then, you know, maybe the increase in offense doesn't counteract that. But, you know, it feels like this is a you know, 83 to 85 win team. I think at minimum and probably more than that. But you know, an injury here, you know, one key injury, or one guy just, you know, completely falling apart. You never know. The last thing from Mo on at least with McKernan, was talking about the fact that they saw the Cubs, you know, see what the Cubs are doing. He says, we're conscious of it, yes. Do we think it has to be, you know, tick for tack? No, we'll worry about our own house. We worry about what we have and what we control. He said they knew the Cubs were going to sign somebody because they just didn't have any internal options. I don't know if Mo said that, but, you know, that's basically what he meant.
Yeah.
Again, I think I feel like we talked about this last week when we talked about Darvish going to the Cubs. Yeah, it's you don't want to be a reactionary team. You don't want to sign somebody just because the other team did. But you also would have been nice if they could have, you know, put a little bit better, what should have, you know, at least on paper, what would have been a little bit better team on the field.
Yeah, that's it's such a tough one because that's the one topic that gets me, because there's no way to really answer that, because you know they have to be paying attention to what everything's going on, and he says that in there, and you never want to look like you're making that knee jerk reaction, and they never do, but you just wonder when the frustration just kind of set in, or are they that disciplined just to kind of ride it out? You know what I mean? Just to stay the course. And I have a feeling that's what it was, because I felt like last year there was a game plan that we're going through this and we're going to see where we end up. And that's why they didn't fail to make moves. They said they tried, but I'm not sure how hard they necessarily tried. And I think they were incremental, kind of like we talked about in this offseason, to see what was going to go on. So I don't know. I mean, that's another tough one. I mean, it kind of goes back in that into the question mark deal. I think they believe it. I think, and I love it because we knew they were going to sign someone. I think that was the most obvious signing of the offseason. They were going to get one of the big starters. Now, I say that's either Darvish. I was going to throw Cobb in there because I thought Cobb was the perfect fit with Hickey coming on board. But I thought after that ship seemed to have sailed, it was either going to be Darvish or Arrieta. So none of the moves they made surprised me. I don't think they surprised the club either, but you know, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I mean, again, I like to think, I can believe it if they want to tell me that they can make a move in the middle of the season after they see what they really need. They have all the pieces, mm-hmm. they have everything, they can do that. But then again, on the flip side, there's people that are there saying they could have done that last year and they didn't do it. They could have done it in the offseason, they didn't do it. And it's difficult to argue that. I mean, it's just, you know, how much faith you want to put in this front office. And, you know, so far, like Mo says, hey, they've got a good track record. And they do. But, you know, and I guess after, you know, 20 years, I mean, that's not, Mo hasn't been up there, but this front office and this mindset has been around for close to 20 years or more. You're going to have a little bit of a valley, but you got to hope that they're turning it around, and we'll have to see how that goes, because, you know, just because you have a great track record in the past, you know, what have you done for me lately? Unfortunately, you know, you can get some slack, and you can get some slack when you're doing something, but the problem is, at least from most fans' point of view, is they're not doing anything or not doing enough, and they're sliding down. I mean, we can talk about 13 in the World Series through, you know, last year, the second year in a row, they're not in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, if you look at that stretch, which is, you know, 5 years, and granted, 3 of those 5 years they were in the playoffs, but, you know, it went downhill pretty quickly on both, especially in 15. You know, that's a decent chunk of time. So I don't know. We will see how they can and fill that out as they go. But, and I get why they like this team, because this team does, like what you said, it has a very good possibilities. It has a lot of things, and this is spring, and this is when you dream on stuff, and everybody's healthy, and everything's great, and, you know, they got through the first couple of days without anybody getting hurt, so that's a good thing, knock on wood. So I can see that. And I'm not saying I don't disagree with them, but, again, when there's so many big names still out there, it kind of feels like, you know, they should be doing something with some of those guys, but then it's like, and we'll get into this roster in a little bit, but where do you put these guys? Where do they go? You know, who gets off the 40 man?
Mm-hmm.
stuff like that. Not that those are insurmountable questions, but they are things that would have to be answered.
Sure. And that's, and I looked at, all off season we went through everyone who was available, you know, trade, free agent signing, and to see where you could truly improve. And it's still, you'd think there's guys out there that would help the team right now, but would it not cause more problems than it could possibly cause more problems than it improves you? You know, so I don't know. There's it's kind of a head scratcher. But you're right. There's just a lot of names that are out there, and there doesn't seem like there's enough jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, some of these guys, and we saw, saw Andrew Cashner go to the Orioles today. And, you know, he's not one of the top guys or anything like that, but, you know, that kind of stuff. Maybe it seems like somebody else Darvish, and then some of the others, I think, some other moves are being made, so maybe they'll start trickling into camps. But, you know, I think this is what, I know Mo said that he's not ruling anything out about opening day, but, you know, if everybody stays healthy, I would be very surprised. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, Mike Matheny's talking again to the media, and that does sometimes backfire on him. It's very interesting. I just listened to just listen to Jennifer Langosh on the Cat Chat podcast, and, you know, I'm a little behind. I think that's the last week's show, but it was very interesting to hear her talking about, and she wasn't overt or anything like that, but it really sounded like the media knows Mike Matheny really doesn't want to talk to them and really doesn't care for them, and they don't care. I think we can tell it too. Of course, Mike looks like, even when he's happy, he looks the same, so it's hard to tell, but mm-hmm. Just kind of interesting that 6 years into this thing and he's still not real fond of that. And she said, maybe she didn't say it quite this way, but it's kind of one of those things that, you know, sometimes managers that don't realize when they take the job that they're going to be talking to the press, you know, twice a day basically. But anyway, Mike's talking to the media. He's talking about Carlos Martinez, and that hardly ever goes well. Let's just read off of what he said, and then we can talk a little bit about it. It says, Martinez has progressed very quickly to being the guy we're calling the ace of our staff. There's a lot of responsibility. I continue to say that he needs to be one of the best pitchers in the league with what he has. That's not pressure. That's just analyzing what he has. It's very unique, and how can we help him get to that next level? It's the little things in his preparation. Is he studying the game and the consistency? That's something that's really hard for an emotional kid. We really love when he's riding these highs, but you got to be careful with the lows, whether it comes from the mound or the batter's box or in the field. That comes with time. All right. Of course, that didn't sit well with a lot of folks, and I can see why not. I guess let's first talk about, before what he's kind of, I don't even know where to start with this, really. I think there's the idea that having this kind of discussion in the press is not necessarily helpful. I don't know that it's, I don't know if it's considered motivation, if it's just, you know, honest talk, if it's, you know, not giving your pitcher the credit it's due, because it's very interesting that he says, we're calling the ace of the staff, and just instead of, hey, he's the ace of our staff, which is not in debate. It may have been in debate like 2 years ago. It's not in debate anymore. But, you know, some of this stuff sounds to me very similar, maybe not quite the same, and I haven't looked up the quotes to really make sure, so I may be misremembering, but, you know, Yadier Molina and Carlos Martinez both at winter warm-up were saying something similar. Mainly, I guess maybe it was just focus. Maybe it was a bit mental aspect of the game. You know, looking for consistency. Now, so I don't know if that's where Mike's going, given how we've seen the team not necessarily embrace all of Martinez's quirks at times. It's easy to read it in a completely different way that's not nearly as positive. Where do you think on this?
I do think that he's trying to be the motivational type when making the comments, but he's made it enough to where it seems derogatory when he says them. Yeah, when he mentions these same things, it seems derogatory now because it seems to be the only thing that he ever brings up. You know what I mean? There's none that it seems like the same every time. So it's kind of tiring, but you know, I wish that he would just be the dominant arm I think he is now, and just take it to another step to where, you know, the narrative is just kind of washed at that point.
Yeah, you know, again, we do talk about the emotional part, and we talk about Chris Carpenter, who was emotional all the time and perfectly, you know, and won a lot of games and didn't seem to get any blowback and, others, but, you know, and this, you know, Carlos Martinez is not Joaquin Andujar, who, you know, melted down in the World Series and, basically wound up getting out of town afterwards. I mean, he's not that emotional. Yeah, I just think it's consistency in results, consistency maybe in approach, but I don't know that we're looking necessarily have to do consistency in emotions. But I also think, again, these are the things that I think most of this stuff you keep in house. You talk to Carlos about, and you come out to the press and say, we're really expecting him to take the next step, and he's going to be, he's already one of the best pitchers in the league. We think he can be even better. You know, he's our guy, yada, yada, yada. I mean, you know, again, Matheny, what, was just a couple years ago? Well, it was last year, maybe year four. I don't remember. It seems like they've kind of run together, but you know, this idea of, well, he may not be our best guy, but Adam Wainwright's still our ace. And now, you know, again, we're to the point where he's not overly calling Martinez the ace. He's just kind of, yeah, well, some people are saying he's the, you know, that's the feel that it comes off with. I don't know. Again, for a guy that's supposed to be leading these players, it's not a really great look, I don't think.
No, and it's, he's big on those titles. You know what I mean? It's ace, and he kept Holiday. Like I said, Holiday was, I thought he was, I actually agree with Matheny a lot on this. My approach wouldn't be the same, but yeah, it means a lot to him because I think there's a part of this that he doesn't want to offend Wainwright as well. You know how he says it in the ace category, but you're right. It just seems like he sure choose some better words and better approach to how to handle that.
And I don't know if it's because he's a former player and, you know, at least he or the era that he grew up in, or maybe even now still, players put more on those terms than, you know, and you don't want to offend, like you said. But, you know, I don't think Adam Wainwright's going to call himself the ace of the staff right now. Adam Wainwright's got 100% of confidence in himself. Mm-hmm. He's not calling himself the ace right now. You know, he's taking it day by day. He's the ace on the days that he pitches, I guess, is what he would probably tell you. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, again, I've sit with this, with the stuff with Colton Wong over the years, although that seems to have gotten better. There's still times where that, we don't know what goes on in the clubhouse. We don't know how he deals with these people every day. But it still feels like there's a lot of a gap there for a guy that's the one big thing that he has is leadership.
Sure.
And I just, you know,
it seems to show a lack of, yeah.
Exactly. And we go back to that, you know, how much value are you getting out of this guy that you're doing all this maneuvering, all this roster stuff, getting all this staff? You know, and then there's still things like this that, you know, like I said, you talked about it. We talked about off air. Bernie Mikolas went through the arguments quite a bit, you know, and it was funny. And I will say Bernie, you kind of laid it into him and fairly so of, hey, you know, why are we complaining about Carlos Martinez and his inconsistency when the manager who's been here 6 years is still making some of the same mistakes that he was making 6 years ago? And I think that's fair. I mean, it's like, you know, hey, you know, I'm not saying you can't call out the players if necessary, but it needs to be necessary, and this doesn't feel like it is.
Yeah, that, and it, that's, I agreed with the article. I mean, it's, I do think he's got that target, like I said, and sometimes it's a little foot and mouth disease, and you're just like, ah, man, I really wish you would approach that another way. And Bernie's right. I do think Bernie kind of tees off on him any chance we get. I mean, he's even done that when Mo and Gersh were on there. And, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable, but he's also made a pretty good living doing that. So I don't know. I just hope that there's one day that we don't have to have this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be nice. All right. Well, I think, I don't know.
It seemed to be a pretty negative, intro this spring, really.
Not great. Well, let's talk about, maybe we need more sleep because that's apparently what the players are getting. Everybody's pushing their times back an hour because they've done some sleep studies. Apparently Matheny's wearing a sleep monitor device. Telling them to come in an hour later. I assume that means they stay an hour later, but they're going to be more productive in the time that they have because they're not groggy or anything of that nature. They did the studies. I did all that. I don't know how well that went. I don't know what that meant. I mean, if it was me, I'd just stay up an hour later, and I don't think it would mess with it. Wouldn't matter at all.
Yeah, I don't know. That article was really cool today, and it was one of those that I don't know how well mapped out it was. I think it was, and I don't mean that as in they don't know what they're talking about, or if I just didn't translate it very well. I did think all that stuff was awesome, where they really integrated Maddox's theories on a lot of those things. I was like, I like to see those kind of changes because change can be so healthy. And I think they needed that. I mean, I really thought that, you know, last year we said stale a whole lot and disinterested a whole lot. And I like these building blocks for something new. So I'm curious to see how it all turns out. And I guess it started last year. They said they were, all the players wore monitors last year. And then those results were brought in this year to kind of map out how they were going to do it. So I'm really curious to see how it translates when games start next week and how it's going to break down of not necessarily performance, but playing time breakdown on each of the guys. And I really thought, I think you read the same article. I'm curious to see how it works, how Maddox is going to map out the pitchers in the bullpen, because he said he feels like every starter should be able to get to 100 pitches when spring breaks or when camp breaks. And everybody heads north, and that relievers need to go back-to-back days at one point, and they need to go 3 out of 4 days at one point. That'll be interesting because that's something the Cardinals have never really done. You know, by the time that the guys get to that, we've got pretty much the roster set in stone at that point. But I'm really intrigued by some of the things that were said in that, and I think Maddox, McGee, and Okendo, of course, are going to make a huge impact. Just by the subtle changes and maybe some drastic changes that they've made to some things that we're not necessarily going to see.
Yeah, that will be. You're right. That will be interesting because especially two years ago they babied everybody, and I don't want to say that in a negative way, but they really tried to ease everybody's workload and, you know, so that they'd have something in the tank for October. They didn't work out that way. So last year they had a great spring. And then had a terrible start to the season. So, it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do, how they do it, and then what the reactions are, you know, later on in the month and later on in the year. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be some tired arms. I don't know.
Completely agree.
But Maddox should know. I mean, I will say he's done this a few years, so he's got a pretty good idea. Interesting article also in the Post-Dispatch about, Dominic Leone. And a guy that apparently Mike Matheny's already kind of thinking can be this, a guy that can come in and get out of jam situations, that Matt Bowman had to do a lot of last year, which, as I will hat tip our friends, at the Bird Law podcast, and I think it was, Adam that said it. It might have been Rusty, but I think it was Adam. You know, you keep bringing a guy in that's a ground ball pitcher, and eventually, you know, a lot of times those ground balls are going to be turned into base hits. I mean, sometimes they're double plays, and Seth Maness did it well, but Matt Bowman, I mean, one, Seth Maness is not in the baseball anymore. Or maybe bounce around somebody's minor league. I don't know. But, and two, Matt Bowman's really not that way. I mean, Seth Bates, to all intents and purposes, got a little lucky.
Oh yeah.
And so, but Leon may be a guy that can also be used instead of having to go to Matt Bowman seemingly every night. But it was interesting though, here I'm reading this, and I guess it's true, but Mike Matheny says, quote, you know, who's going to be able to help us get out of an inning? That's not something just anybody can do. And that's probably true at times, but, and we're going to get to our roster here in a little bit, but most everybody on this roster, I think, either can or has gotten out of, you know, could do that.
Yeah.
And I think to some degree, you wonder, I mean, like a Sam Tuilavala, could he do that if he was trusted to do that? You know, and I guess, I mean, that's where it comes down to they know more than we do, but it feels like at times, Matheny's already got it in his head that this guy can't do it, and we haven't seen if he can or not.
Sure. I wonder if that's not a big part of, you know, we had that paint by number to the bullpen conversation, that Gould had kind of struck. And, you know, you bring in Norris and you're right. You have just about everybody down there now with Tuivalala being the name that has the biggest question mark, but everybody else can get outs. So you're wondering if they're just not making the decision easier to go to anyone in any given situation. I didn't read the article. I wish I would have. I just missed it somewhere because I would have been all over that because I'm trying to get used to know the new guys. But that's very interesting. And whenever you said that, that was exactly what I thought. As I was like, are they trying to make the bullpen idiot proof, with, for lack of a better term?
Oh yeah.
To where any position they can go now, they can get outs out of an arm that has done it in the past.
And I think they really are doing their best to limit the bad choices, but, or limit the wrong choices, put it that way, that no matter what you do with a guy, it's probably going to be a right choice. But I think that to some degree, the quote that I'd put out there just has that idea that, yeah, this guy and this guy and this guy can do that, and we think they can do that, and they seem to be able to, but Mike Matheny's not going to think of them like that, and so it doesn't matter. You know, like, well, you know, let's say Gregerson gets to be the closer, you know, is he going to bring him into the eighth inning in a game that, you know, the outs need to be gotten, and then let him finish up in the ninth or something like that? Or is he going to think that he needs to be a clean inning for Gregerson? You know, that's the kind of thing that's, we don't know. And I feel like Matheny got a little bit better at that, but he's not significantly better than that than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out because we really like the pieces. I really like the pieces that they put in place. This also seems like if things go bad, we're going to be having a lot of the same conversations that we had last year. It's where they were close, but just this decision led to this decision, and that's the frustrating part.
Yeah. Could be. I agree. It's a possibility. You mentioned it a few minutes ago. Jason Mott gets a minor league deal. Also not related. But Rowan Wick was claimed by the Padres as he was designated for assignment when, Norris came along and he didn't pass through waivers because the Padres love to grab Cardinals.
Yeah, when I saw
this, like that,
everybody thought the exact same on that because I was busy this afternoon, but when they, when that broke and I got it on Twitter, I just about seen a text. I was like, imagine that.
Yeah. You look at Jason Mott, you know, minor league deal. He had a 3.54 ERA last year in 40 innings for the Braves, but his FIP was 5.44. Second year in a row that he's had a FIP of over 5, and actually three of the last four, his year in Chicago was all right. But, you know, ever since coming back from the Tommy John, it's not necessarily been that great for him. And now, again, minor league deal, a chance for him to come back to the organization. I got no problem with. It's just like Edward Mojica earlier, you know, minor league deal. If something happens and they capture some of that past history, great. But if not, you know, they spend some time in Memphis or whatever. I don't know. I mean, you see, 27 strikeouts and 40 innings. That's not what we're used to out of Jason Mott. Six homers in 40 innings. You know, we'll see. It doesn't really look great for a, you know, comeback story, but, you know, usually they don't until it happens.
Yeah, it's one of those where I want to say what can it hurt, mainly because what really can it hurt, but I also don't want it to look like we're downplaying the signing or that they don't have any hope on it at all. I was glad to see him come back just due to the charity work and all that good stuff and every good thing that he's done in St. Louis. And you're exactly right. You took the words out of my mouth. I never felt like he was that great coming back from Tommy John. So I didn't even look at the numbers. I know that last year he was not very good in Atlanta. Didn't get many outs. But, you know, let's see. Yeah, I mean, maybe it would be great for him to go back through Memphis as well. I mean, obviously where he's from and where he lives. So that could be beneficial as well. But to the Cardinals, I mean, it's kind of a wait and see approach, I would think.
Yeah, like I said, it's kind of a, I think this is more of a hat tip to him as the person. Is a chance for him to play another, like you said, play a year basically in his backyard, since he lives in Memphis. But they don't expect anything. And, you know, again, we'll see, and maybe he's surprised, maybe that surprises, but, and if nothing else, it's a reliable, you know, it's a guy that has experience. If he does happen to capture something again with a reliever and short innings, you just never know.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. All right. Well, I mean, there's still stories out there. Lots of different things that you could talk about. And again, lots of videos, very, very lots of great stuff either on Cardinals.com or the Post Dispatch site. So I'm not going to go through all of them because we could be here forever. Let's talk about our 25 man roster. This is, you know, again, this is our predictions right now. And Al and I were talking about it. I doubt we have too many that are different. But, you know, we'll see where we're at and see what we think about it. So, Alan, first of all, I assume you, like me, went with the 12 hitters, 13 pitchers split.
I kind of did a little of both. I did an option on both of them, but, I have a feeling we're going to be playing with more of the 13 pitchers type situation.
All right. Well, we know the starters. So who are your four bench guys then?
Well, in the situation where there's only four bench guys, I went with Greg Garcia, with Carson Kelly, mm-hmm. with Jose Martinez, and with Harrison Bader.
Yep. That's what I did.
That's what I went with. I would really like to see that go to a fifth and let Voit get some pinch hit at bats. But, you know, I bet he'll be in the big leagues quite a bit this year. I think that's going to be a very busy, the highway between Memphis and St. Louis could be very busy this year.
Yeah. And I think it was our Bird Law friends again that pointed out it's early in the season with some off days and stuff like that. Maybe you start with 13 hitters and then you go to 13 pitchers later on. I've thought that before. We've thought that before. And then it seems like the Cardinals still just want to, you know, just use less pit, you know, use your pitchers less and get some more bitter, and they still stay with that. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, then we've got, I don't know. Who's your last couple of bullpen guys? Cause again, I think that we probably got everything the same.
Well, I went with Gregerson, Norris, Cecil, Bowman, Lyons, Tui Vilala, and Leon. Is what I went with. And then I had, question marks with Sheriff, who I really like, and I think that the Cardinals would really be interested in if he was a free agent. And then of course Brevia, who pitched well for him last year. So, I didn't think that was going to be much different than anybody else. I'd like to hear some, if it was, because I may have very well have been wrong and just missed somebody.
No, let's see. I mean, I think Norris, Gregerson, Lyons, Bowman, and Leon, Tuivala, Cecil, and I've got Brevia because I think, you know, with Lyons and Cecil, you know, they'll probably wind up sending Sheriff back down. I Sheriff did all right, but I think he could use a little bit more, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that honestly don't know what he's going to do in the big leagues, because he probably has enough time in Memphis, but it won't hurt him to go back.
Well, and that's another one of those path of least resistance moves.
Yeah.
You know, they're sending him back, you know, that he'll be, you're going to need arms at some point, and that's an easy decision to make, really.
So, yeah, you're right. The roster doesn't, there's not even open spots. I mean, it's not like you're looking, you know, whether Kelly can beat out some veteran as a backup catcher. You're not looking at, you know, maybe there's a bullpen spot, like you said. You know, maybe it's down to Sheriff and Brebbia, how that works out. You know, but even if they switch and go to 13, you know, then maybe you're right. Maybe it's Voit versus Brebbia or something like that, but there's not a lot of, and I guess we haven't had this in the last couple of years. There's not a lot of debate about this squad, I don't think. Now, it always feels like that this time of year, and then something happens and,
sure,
you know, this changes. But right now, I mean, I guess Harrison Bader could be beaten out by somebody that had a great spring, but that's really about the only place I see something happening.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, knock on wood, we haven't had the blown out elbow. Mm-hmm. You know, in the very first couple of days, which I'm always concerned about. I would be shocked if it went to this. I think that in a perfect world, this is exactly how they would go between, I think we could all get it, but something will happen to where things get shaken up a little bit. It happens every spring.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always something different. So, all right. Well, let's tackle our Twitter questions here before we finish up the top of our favorite Cardinal lists that we've been doing all winter long. So it's going to be fun to finish that up. But we have a couple of questions, and I'll go hit the one from Adam Butler. Like I said, that's LandStance1 on Twitter. That's Bird Law co-host, Redbird Daily contributor along over there with Alan. Lots of places for Adam. And he says, how do you see the Carpenter, Jerko, Martinez situation playing out through the course of the season? I've listened to them, and Adam is very high on Carlos Martinez too, but who isn't? Jose Martinez. It really feels like he's going to get the bulk of maybe first base, probably first base over the season. What do you think? I get where Adam's coming from, and I'm not saying that he's wrong, but I still have problems imagining they're really going to push Jerko out of this lineup and put Carpenter at third a whole lot of times.
Yeah, I don't think that, I think we are going to see that a lot, because I think the organization really believes in Martinez, as they think that his bat's probably ready. I think it's more of a first base issue at this point. I think he may be one of those guys that he's the first bat that gets in the lineup, regardless of who needs the off day. You know, I think that's how it's going to work. I don't even mean it as in, I think outside of center field, catcher, and shortstop, he's going to get the first look at any of those spots. You know, and I think that, Wong needs a day, they'll play Carpet second. You know, Jerko needs a day, they'll play Carpenter third. You know where I'm going with this, and I think he can play the corners well enough to where he'll get those at-bats. I do think he's gonna get a ton of at-bats this year. I think that, just like you and I were talking about, like I put it on Twitter, they love his ability to turn around high velocity fastballs. I expect him to play opening day against Syndergaard. You know, if all health is considered, I think that, that will be the play out of them. You know, I've read enough to where they want to rest Jerko because of the two slow second halves that he's had in a row. So they want to give him ample time to rest and to keep his bat at top peak when he does play. So I think they have an idea of how those guys are going to play. And I do believe that Martinez is going to play a bunch. And I think he is going to push for a lot of starts.
Yeah, if you look at it, there was a whole lot of talk this offseason about the Cardinals bringing in people. It always seemed to be focused on third base, which, assuming that there was any smoke to the, or any fire to the smoke, may make you wonder what the Cardinals think about having Jerko at third base, and maybe they're not that confident with him over there. Now, I don't know exactly why. I mean, he's hit well those last couple years. You know, he slowed down.
He's fielded well. He was a good third baseman last year.
And last year, I mean, he was injured in the second half, which I think can at least give some explanation to some slower numbers. You know, but that said, I mean, that may be right. I mean, it may be that the organization's not as high on him as they are on some of the other things. Or, and it really doesn't matter what the organization thinks. I guess it's what Mike Matheny thinks. You know, it's going to be very difficult to see Carpenter out of this lineup, very often, because that's just not what Carpenter does. I mean,
sure,
he's 150, 155 games, for a lot of times, unless he gets hurt. Now, if his shoulder doesn't, you know, if his shoulder acts up and he goes on the DL, then that's a different story, but, I don't know. You're right. I think they're going to do their best to get Martinez in the lineup. And I do think those outfielders are going to play a lot. So, you know, maybe Bader gets in here and there, but, you know, Jose Martinez may spend most of his time at first base. You know, you could rotate, you know, and have, you know, Carpenter and Jerko and even Wong and Martinez all, you know, with the day off. It'd be like 1 or 2 days off a week. But again, that's asking a lot from Mike Matheny and two, you know, I don't know. It may be that we see a lot of hot hand play, which is kind of scary too, but, you know, maybe that'll work. I don't know.
Yeah. I like the fact that, that Jerko came in with the dietary changes and looked slimmed down to, try to remain healthy throughout the season. Especially, I always like it when a veteran comes in like that, that you know that he's heard the talk all off season. He's probably felt like he was out the door, and you know, you feel like that's the one place they can upgrade, and Martinez is going to play first and the Carpenter will play a lot of third. For him to still show up and to do the things that he's done and shown that he's ready for the long haul of the season means a lot to me. Now, I know the first response is going to be, well, he did that because that's the only way he was going to make it or get all those starts. And I just don't believe that. I feel like he was going to, I feel like he's trying to earn a spot, earn it and keep it. That being said, I'm also a huge Jerko fan, so that, I could be biased in that, but I was glad to see that he was in camp, and most of their guys do come in camp early, but then to make the changes and look like he's in great shape, and I know you hear best shape of your life stuff every spring, but it meant a lot to me to see him there, considering all the circumstances where he would have every reason to be like, well, you know, I don't know if they've bought into me, why do I need to buy into them type deal?
Yeah. We'll see. I think that you're right. It may be, you know, we'll see how everybody does in the spring. You shouldn't put a whole lot of weight into what they do in the spring, but sometimes those decisions get made there because that's, you know, if everything's equal, then that's the only tiebreaker. So, and then our friend, Mr. Kyle Reese, otherwise known as the Prospect Killer. If you have to watch his last Periscope, and you'll understand why we've determined him that, just to aggravate him too. And from Birds on the Black, and again, you've read all his prospect stuff, and if you haven't, you should. Also co-hosts with Colin Gardner over at Prospects to Be Named Later, which is another good show to listen to. His question for us is, which of the former Cardinals that are now on the Toronto Blue Jays roster is going to have the best season? Now, that would be Alamedes Diaz, that would be Randall Grichuk, that would be Jaime Garcia. Is there another one? It feels like there should be another one. Maybe that's it. Anyway.
I'm racking up, right?
I will pull the roster up just to make sure. But out of those three, who's the best, do you think?
I think Grichuk probably has the best season just because I think he's going to probably... He could hit 30 homers in that ballpark. And if he's going to play every day, I would think that he would be the last one. You know, I like all three of those guys, and I've always been a big Garcia fan. But I just feel like Grichuk is, I think that's a beneficial trade for both, for both teams in this. And I really think he's going to have a pretty big year because the ball just flies out of there. And, I know Bautista made changes to a swing and all that. And, which he'd have to basically double his home run numbers, you know, over a 5-year span or whatnot. But I think the ballpark played a lot into that. And I think Grisham could thrive there.
Yeah, I think I'll go, and looking at the roster, that looks like the only three. I don't know why I felt like there was four. Maybe I'm already counting Josh Donaldson, maybe. Maybe I should be, you know, Troy Tulowitzki, who for years was rumored to become a Cardinal. never did.
No.
I think you're right on Grichuk. I think I like what he's going to do or what he's going to be able to do in that ballpark and playing every day. That being said, you know, I don't know that that was not a bad deal for them to get Jaime Garcia. I think he's still got, you know, quite a bit that he can do. He's kind of now becoming that journeyman since he left the Cardinals, you know, going from Atlanta to Minnesota for one start, and then the Yankees. Wasn't anything spectacular at all last year. The ERAs were at 4 over at every spot. And putting him in that East, a lot of big guns. But he still may be able to hold his own. We'll see how that goes. I don't know that you would expect an ERA of a 3.50 variety or anything like that. And so that's another reason why I think Grichuk is probably going to be more valuable to them. But, it may not be as bad as we think. I don't know. I'm sure there's some deeper analysis that'll show you what you could expect from him, but I think that's, Grichuk seems to be the best option there. All right. Well, we've got three players left on our list. You've been listening long enough. You know, we've done this project all year long. We, after the last season, I try to get the words out. We asked you to rate your top 15 Cardinals, your favorite 15 Cardinals. We've calculated all that, and we have done this all the way since episode 50, I believe. That was on October 20th. It's the first time we did this, and you can find the list of players and the shows that they were talked about at our Twitter page, Meet Me at Mutual. But we only have three left, and when you get into three, and it's pretty easy to know the names, may not know the order, but we got a pretty good idea of who the names are. All three of these guys that we're going to talk about tonight reached the 1,000-point plateau. They're the only three that did. I don't know if they were named on every ballot, but they were named on a lot of them. And our third place guy is a current Cardinal. Guy that catches every day. He's ready for 174. It's Yadier Molina.
I'm impressed with all the work that you guys have done. I thought that this was a lock one or two to where I was bringing up baseball reference pages for the other two, because I thought that Yadi was one that I was going to get, was not going to get in the three spot. So I thought Musial and Gibson were miscast, but it's an opinion poll. This was a pretty good one. I mean, what can you say about Molina? Best catcher of his era, hands down, defensively. You think?
Yeah, I think. Oh,
I mean, just I mean, yeah,
of his era for sure. I mean, there's.
I mean, I don't think it. Yeah, it's just not close.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, you can argue overall all time. You can argue Hall of Fame. But I don't think you can, I mean, you look at the, and again, Gold Gloves is not the be all and end all measurement, but I mean, you know, not only does he have Gold Gloves, he has Platinum Gloves, which they didn't even, I mean, he won the first ever Platinum Glove. He's won three of them, I think, maybe two. I don't know, but whatever.
Four.
He's won four Platinum Gloves?
Four.
Wow. And there's only
he won the five. Yeah, I know he won the first three in a row.
Yeah,
and then Hayward won one, and then he did not win it this year.
No, because he didn't even win the.
Yeah, he didn't win the. Gold Glove.
But you know the Platinum, which is again, it's only 5 or 6 years old. Yeah. And it's the one that, you know, it's overall, you know, who's the best of the Gold Gloves. Yeah, I mean, defensively, there is no equal, for him, especially in this generation. I mean, again, you can talk historical later on.
Well, and I thought about throwing out Ever, but we just, you just can't determine that. I mean, the best I've ever seen, but.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, hard to imagine anybody else. And you know, obviously Yachty's got, you know, some significant numbers. He's got some significant moments. You know, obviously the home run in this, 06 NLCS. Which, I mean, I always felt like Yachty, even in his early career when he couldn't hit anything, always seemed to be able to hit with the, when the game was on the line or a runner was on there, he would hit the double that drove in a run or whatever. You know, it's just, and it, he's been a Cardinal his whole entire life. He's been very passionate about a lot of things. He's the guy that, you know, this, a lot of this current generation of fans, that's all they know. I mean, Molina's been back there since 04, right? Wasn't he a rookie behind Matheny in 04 when they went to the World Series? You know, that's a 14 years, working on his 15th season. I mean, you know, my kids weren't even born when he was started this. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy to think. I mean, that was the knock on him forever, was that he would never hit enough to be up here. Mm-hmm. Or he would never hit enough to be that big of a contributor, but his glove was head and shoulders above the rest. But like I said, I mean, he has, you know, six seasons of an OPS plus over 100 and several more right at 100. You know, he's turned himself into a productive hitter. Never struck out a lot. That was what I always liked about him. I think it's gotten more, it's become increasingly, it's more as he's gotten older, which is understandable, and the game has changed to where that's not as big as an ill, the three true outcomes type of situation. But, yeah, he's definitely turned himself into a very productive hitter. I mean, heck, he hit arguably what he was, well, I don't know if there's any argument about it, but he hit fifth for him basically all year last year. Yeah. You know, for a team that at one point, the offense wasn't very good, but toward the end of the season, it was decent. Yeah, you just can't say enough about him. And that's, you know, Bernie is right about something else. They brought up the overrated conversation recently, and he made it, but Bernie pointed something out. He goes, he makes such a difference that guys don't try to steal on him. Yeah. He completely changes offenses.
Yeah, that is true. Yachty's Yachty. I mean, and there's, is no doubt, I don't think that, you know, I know we had the, you know, we could have gotten into this discussion that, you know, Benji Molina was on, the radio talking about how you can't take Yachty out because he's a veteran and he's producing and you don't just bring up a kid and let them play just because they're young. And maybe there's a little bit of truth to that, but there's also some idea that, you know, Yachty could be better if he didn't. Play all those games, and Kelly's got to have some time to play. So, you know, we've talked about it. Make him a dedicated catcher, get him in there once, you know, once around the rotation for sure would be helpful. But we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, Yachty's just, I mean, he's the guy that they're going to put a statue out front. Even if he doesn't make it in the Hall of Fame, it seems like they're going to retire his number.
Sure.
It's just not surprising that he finishes high up. Yachty wound up with double digits, at least 10 votes. So obviously that's what double digits means, in, first, second, thirds, fifth, sixth, sevenths, and I guess that's it. And 9 votes at fourth and 8. So, you know, top, you know, basically really spread out, but, very valuable. 1,083 points, for Yachty. Now, top two. And second, with 1,163, so another 80 points more than Yachty, it's the Wizard of Oz, Ozzie Smith.
I was holding out hope that he was number one, but I didn't. I had a feeling that he probably wasn't.
If it makes you feel any better, Ozzie is did get the most first place votes. Ozzie with 23 first place votes, which was actually 3 more than Stan Musial. And so that's something, I guess. You know, if we had rated this like the MVP, where the first place gets like, you know, 15 and then second place gets 10, you know, that kind of thing, where there's a big gap between first and second, Ozzie would have won it. But you know, Ozzie was my guy growing up. He was your guy growing up. You know, we talk about the Gold Gloves, we talk about the flip, we talk about everything, and then you talk about his 1987 season when he hit 303 and should have been the MVP.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I'm so proud that we have two transformative defensive players on this list in the top three. That means a lot to me, because I think it gets overlooked a lot. Offense pays the bills. I get it. That's the game, and it is. But Ozzie saved as many runs as almost anybody on the list accounted for. You know, one of those types. And I know that's far-fetched, but he was that good of a defender. Now, he is the best defensive shortstop ever. You could watch Ozzie play and make routine plays that Vizquel would make that made highlight reels, where Ozzie made routinely. He was all over the field. He was one of those where he even had Pendleton on his side, and that infield was top-notch. I still say that Ozzie probably could have played second, third at the same time and not killed you. You know, he had that much range. So I was glad to see that. Like I said, and if anybody hasn't heard this, I had no clue where the guys were voted in. But as Cardinals fans, we had a pretty good idea where they were going to go. The fact that we have two guys in the top three that are so good defensively, which means a lot to me, because that's kind of my favorite thing about the game, to make it in this says a lot about the organization and a lot about the voters. So I'm really glad to see that. He made himself into an offensive player and really changed his game to match the ballpark and the Herzog lineups and just the way that they played. But defensively, he just shined out above all the rest. And I talk about this all the time, and I went to a Hall of Fame dinner here in Tulsa where he came down and did a speaking engagement. It's a real intimate setting to where it was a dinner, you know, Q&A. Well, I talked to him for about 20 to 30 minutes before the deal even started. And it was funny because if anything about modern era teams were brought up, his golf game was brought up, the flips were brought up, the competitive nature in him turned on. It was incredible. Not to where he was or anything like that. You still felt like he could play. I think Ozzie still feels like he could play. He would just crank it up a notch about anything, but he was awesome. Really approachable. I've run into people in St. Louis that have talked about how he's not that approachable and whatnot. The situation, I've met him twice, and both times he was fantastic. A really impressive individual, and I'm just glad to see. I was hoping he was number one, but I understand why he wasn't. But, I'm just glad of everybody that voted that they saw in him and in Yadier to what they've done to this organization.
And I think because we saw Ozzie is why we can appreciate Yadi. I think the Cardinal fan base expects and appreciates and understands defense more than maybe some others do, and that's because we've seen a lot of good year. I mean, but it really, you know, it could go back for sure. But I think the fan base is now, it ties into what we saw with Ozzie and some of the other guys that were there in that 80s team that played pretty good defense. But, you know, Ozzie was the key of that, and now we expect somebody to play good defense. And you look at Dexter Fowler last year, and, you know, he hit well and did okay, but he wasn't as defensively swift as people expected, and that really got people on his bad side, or vice versa, I guess. So I think that really boils down to what Ozzie brought to the table. All right. Well, it's number one. 1,287 votes, so another 120 more than Ozzie. But given who it is and given the fact that he's a guy that all of us saw coming up and all of us got to see the best parts of his career, it's not surprising that our number one is Albert Pujols, who, again, for the fact that we tend to forget him now because he's playing out in Anaheim and we never see him, and he's a shell of what he used to be. Those 10 years, 11 years that started his career in St. Louis were just amazing. And then something that I don't think we've really fully grasped how great it was when we saw it, even though we knew it was pretty special.
Oh, it's spoiled. I'm particularly spoiled, you know, about how good he was, to where it's funny. Fam season, you know, if you remember when we were talking in November, I didn't realize how great Fam season was last year, until I went back and looked. Well, we're so spoiled with these massive seasons that Pujols put up. And Holiday for the most part, but Holiday didn't match anything that Albert did. Mm-hmm. Massive doubles amounts, massive homers, you know, huge batting average seasons. I mean, just a great player. Turned himself into a great first baseman. My question to you is, he's won 3 MVPs. Could he have won 5 or 6 if Bonds wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a runner-up, 1, 2, 2 years in a row to Bonds, and he was third in 2004, runner-up again in 2006. Sure. I mean, he was a fourth in MVP his rookie year. I mean, with enough breaks, at least one more, possibly two. If he'd been in the American League those years, he probably would have had him. It was pretty incredible. You know, looking at this, he's had a couple of MVP finishes since he went to Los Angeles, 17th both times, had won All-Star. But, you know, the years, he hit .299 his last year in St. Louis. Since then, he's not anywhere close. I mean, he hit .285 his first year in Anaheim. And he still holds a .305 career average. I don't know how low he has to, somebody's done the math, I'm sure, but, you know, what he has to hit this year to drop under 300 as career, which would be pretty sad. But yeah, you 445 homers. I mean, would have easily passed. If he'd stayed, he'd have passed Stan Musial, you know, the next year, for the team's career home run record. He had the chance to be something really special here, but you look at it was almost immediate. And even that last year in St. Louis was not typical Albert, like you said, but it was, you know, he was one RB shy of 100. He was 1 point shy of his 300 because he had that run of, you know, 330, 100 every year until that. You know, like I said, he's not been what he has been before. He's nothing like he was when he was in St. Louis, but I think some of us would still like to have seen him stay, even though it's probably best for the team that he didn't.
Yeah. It is a sad deal that he's a forgotten great. He thought he was going to Los Angeles. He didn't realize he was going to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was part of it, and I think the contract demands were a big part of it. And like I said, I've never had any ill will for him leaving for the reasons that he did, and the Cardinals letting him walk. The Cardinals are the organization they are because they'll let a guy like Albert Pujols walk. But, just to highlight his time here, it was insanely good. You know, the three home run game in the World Series, it was so impressive to hit even after the adjustments are being made at the biggest stage at the biggest time. You know, I was like, man. And then I saw one just the other day and I was like, his hands were just so incredibly fast and strong for a big guy. It's unreal.
Yeah, you look at some of those three home run games that he had, some of those amazing moments that he had, you know, his home run on Easter Sunday that one season that was like a walk-off. That was a three home run game, including one might have been a walk-off in that game. So many. And I mean, you got the Brad Lidge home run. I mean, so many different moments. It is the closest thing that we could see to Stan Musial, and just Stan's career lasted longer and was a little bit more consistent close to the end. But I mean, when you see what he was doing fully formed in 2001, you know, all the way through 2011, it was, that was the, that was as close as we could get to Stan. And that's why we were calling him, you know, El Hombre, because that was our version of Stan Musial. And it's never, it'd be very unlikely we would ever see somebody that has that kind of career. I mean, where they could start out and be that great their first year and then just continue to be that, that amazing. And stay relatively injury free. I mean, you know, he played in 143 games in 2006, 148 in 2008. I mean, that's 147 in 2011. Before he left, I mean, he was playing in at least, you know, what, at least 145 games basically every year, and, and some years in the 150s and such. So, obviously it's been different since he went to Anaheim, but not even, even then. You know, he had 1 year where he had 99 games, but other than that, he's in the 140, 150 range, even in Anaheim. He's staying on the field. He's not hitting quite as well, and the DH helps him there, but, still, I mean, it's just incredible all the way around.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's, you know, heals like a superhero, breaking a wrist and, you know, coming back as quick as he did.
Yep, after 2 weeks, it was just, a couple other times where, you know, and he's dealt with that plantar fasciitis so long, and, you know, he can't run anymore. I mean, never, I mean, he's always sneaky fast. He always,
we kind of got some Molina. He and Molina are a lot alike.
Yeah. I mean, three times in his career in St. Louis, he stole over 10 bases. I mean, 16 in 1 year, 2 years, and 14 in another year. But it was like one of those things where the pitcher just like couldn't see him. Cause it'd be like, he'd just all of a sudden be at second base, you know?
And, yeah.
You know, it's like they just never even saw him on base and forgot about him. So it was pretty incredible. So.
Think
about that time where in San Diego where he hit the ball off of Chris Young's face, and then, you know, went up at first and, you know, Young had to leave the game and, he went around and wound up at the end of that turn around the bases, knocking the catcher out of the game, I think too. He slid into him and knocked him out of the game, and it was like, you know, just don't get in his way. He was a wrecking crew for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's the end of this project. Again, I'll update this last three on our site, but if you want to go back and check those out, I definitely would recommend. We've got the list up there and how everything voted. So you'll find that. We'll leave that pinned on the Me and Mutual Twitter feed for a while, to come. So you can check that out. Alan, anything, I know we've run a little bit long tonight, but, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I think so. I think we've kind of touched on all the topics that we wanted to. We had a lot of negativity in the first, but ended on a high note, and I'm ready for some spring training. We'll be able to, weather permitting, follow up on a game next Friday.
Yep. Yep. Game's coming. And that's good, because we're going to have new things to talk about. We're going to have, you know, new approaches and hopefully no injuries to discuss, but, we'll be here, talking about some baseball, when we get back at you next time. So, until then, I'm Daniel. That's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.